T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
I would not leave you in times of trouble. We never could have come this far. I took the good times, I'll take the bad times, I take you just the way you are. Oh.
That is a jam, we'll stare at.
Of course it is.
That's a good one.
That's a severe jam.
Severe jam. He wrote that about, was it his first wife? And not to bring everybody down, but isn't that also the wife whose brother swindled him out of millions of dollars as his then manager, I believe. If you look that up, that is accurate. So it's a really sweet song, but there were some family issues with the brother, I believe, or one of the brothers. But I do love that song. Billy Joel is your artist of the day. Why, you ask?
Because no Scott Parks today.
Because Scott Parks is gone.
You better believe it.
That is on the list of banned artists, is it not?
I think it is. He's so weird. Dude.
We couldn't decide between Nirvana or Billy Joel because he says both of them will never be AOC.
The funny thing his hatred for Billy Joel is it's just an odd...
Right, it doesn't make sense for Scott Parks to hate Billy Joel.
Well, not only that.
On paper.
I think if you ask most people, they're either neutral about Billy Joel or they love Billy Joel. Very few people. I've never met anyone who has this just awful, guttural hatred for someone as just pop milquetoast as Billy Joel.
He's like Toto. Nobody hates Toto. Now, granted, nobody really is a Toto super fan, I don't think, but nobody hates Toto.
And my computer just went down. That's great because I'm here by myself. I'm so glad I have Will
today.
And Sam. So, yes, Scott Parks took his daughter off to college today, his oldest child. And I think that it matters that I throw out that distinction because I've always felt like dropping the oldest off is the hardest for most.
Mm-hmm.
Second only maybe to dropping your very last child off to school.
By the way, before we unwrap that, have you had any contact with him today?
So he...
I noticed he tweeted something.
He tweeted something and he texted me this morning. And I'll just read it to you. Because I wanted to leave him alone today. I mean, today... It was a very hard day for me last year, as you all know.
Sure.
Today, I got a very funny text from him in the car. He's crying, and in the background is his beaming, beautiful freshman at KU daughter. And it's the funniest picture, because I know he's joking. He wasn't actually sobbing in the car, although I had to look twice. And I think they're doing just fine. I got another couple of pictures from his girlfriend later in the day. She looks moved in. I can see the microwave and the, you know, laundry basket, and they're getting her settled. And I guess Scott is going up in the morning, and then her mom is going up in the afternoon. Like, they're tag-teaming it, so somebody's there all day.
Mm-hmm.
But what's funny is I just went and... I'm going to use the word dumped off my son for his sophomore year.
You deposited him on campus.
Oh, and it's so funny, the difference a year makes. The difference between last year's drop-off and this year's drop-off is, I can't even tell you.
She effectively pulled up to the curbside, gave him the boot, and drove away.
I don't know that I slowed the car down. I gave him a credit card. He's got to go to Walmart and pick out some just necessities. He needs hangers and stuff like that because he's been gone all summer.
Well, I was going to say, he's been gone all summer anyway.
Yeah.
There really shouldn't be much issue with you separating from him at this point.
I mean, I've had him for 6 days, and I've loved every second of those
six days. Yeah.
But he's just so happy to be back, and I'm happy he's back, and, you know, it's just, it's all good.
How much of it
all good?
How much of it is the fact that he's basically half an hour away as opposed to you know, at the University of Vermont or something like that.
So I've always said, and I do believe this to be true, proximity has absolutely nothing to do with it. The fact that they are no longer in your nest, it doesn't matter if you're 10 minutes away or 6 hours away. Now, I have several friends who have kids at Arkansas, Ole Miss, California schools, and they will say to you there is some peace of mind knowing that you can just hop in the car and go if you need to. That obviously makes it harder when you've got kids 3 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours away kind of thing.
Sure.
But I feel like proximity has nothing whatsoever to do with it. And so if you're listening and like this is the first time you've ever done this, it is totally normal for you to be a train wreck for a while. And then next year, you're going to be smiling and singing, and I was dancing in my car on the way back on I-70 because I don't take K-10 because it's a death trap. So welcome to school, kids. Be safe. Have a good year. Go forth and learn. Coming up today at 4:30, we have an hour-long special produced by the fantastic Sam Stevie, and we've been talking about this the last couple days. You will hear from Ricky Kidd, who was freed on Friday after spending nearly 23 years in prison for a crime he had nothing to do with.
We had the goods. I always believed that I was going to get the opportunity to go home, but you get denied and you tell your family that I'm coming. And you're trying to make them encourage, you're trying to encourage them. And I didn't know, for real. I just wanted to believe that eventually the hard work would pay off, but you never know. But I had to try to keep them encouraged, keep myself encouraged. I barely made it. That's how extremely complicated it is. This wasn't no short feat.
No, it was not. They have known since at least 2009 that Ricky Kidd was completely innocent of the crime for which he was convicted on very shaky, very flimsy, sickeningly flimsy non-evidence. They have known since 2009. And you know, as a victim of crime, justice turns fairly slowly to get someone brought to justice for any crime that's been committed against you, right? Let me tell you this. If you are in prison for something you didn't do, even once the courts figure that out.
Oh, it makes that initial trial look like the Indy 500.
Untangling this mess and giving this man his life back that was stolen by the state has been a nightmare that he has been living for decades. 10 years they have known. Authorities have known it wasn't him. And I will remind everyone, in that same span of time, the actual killer has been roaming free to commit other crimes. So there are many victims that flow from this case. We will hear from him at 4:30 this afternoon, and it's an hour-long special, and then we will take your calls after you hear from Ricky, because I know you guys are going to have questions, and to the best of my ability, because we sat down with him for such a long time, I will answer those questions for you.
Is the suspected killer still free at this point?
Yes.
And they have an idea of who it is.
No, they know exactly who it is.
I knew they had that idea the whole time. I didn't realize he was still.
And you know, one of the things I asked Sean O'Brien, and this should scare the hell out of everyone with the Midwest Innocence Project, I said, when these cases come to light, and keep in mind, there have been around 250 prisoners a year exonerated for crimes they have not committed. Well, they have released 160 people from death row who were found to be innocent. 160. That is statistically 1 in 10 on death row have been released because they didn't do it. 1 in 10. And when you really get into the weeds of how difficult it is to get these guys out, how they are released with really nothing but the shirts on their backs. And then keep in mind, when someone's on death row for something they didn't do, that means there is someone still out there who did this horrible thing. And I asked Sean, like, when this happens and we now all know this person is innocent, how often do the prosecutors around the country then go back and go after the real perpetrator? And coming up this afternoon, you will hear what percentage of the actual people who did this are then taken back to court and convicted, and I think your jaw will hit the floor, because it's easier for states or counties to say, we would rather this just go away.
Let's look the other way on this one.
Let's just please stop talking about this in the press. Let's just move on. And that's a danger to everyone out there.
And then the ugly side of that, the other side of that coin, which I don't think anyone wants to talk about, is how much of the issue of somebody has to pay for this crime comes up, regardless of whether or not it's actually the person who did it.
Yeah, and good luck with that. Now, I will say this, because I adore Jean Peters Baker, adore the Jackson County prosecutor. I do believe she will make this right to the extent that her office can. We have a dangerous person still out there who is alleged to have done these things. So that is coming up today at 4:30. Scott Parks will be back tomorrow with his box of tissues. You are listening to Dana and Parks. Stick with us.
Oh my God, that makes me laugh.
I am all by myself. Speaking of Celine Dion, I was actually going to hold this until later. I've got just a bunch of stuff I want to pass on today. Some of it good, some of it bad, most of it good.
Any story involving Celine Dion is a good story.
Well, it's sort of involving Celine Dion by default. Did you see? They have released a new image of the Titanic that shows, quote, shocking decay.
That is a real stretch to link Celine Dion to the actual Titanic.
No, that is right on par.
The actual Titanic, not the film.
I'll never
let
you go.
Not the soundtrack.
Listen to this story. Was this from Money? I don't know where it was from. It's all over. You can find it online. Rose would be so disappointed. For the first time in nearly 15 years, footage has been captured by humans showing the wreck of the Titanic, and things are not looking good. Titanic is returning to nature, says Park Stevenson, a ship historian who spoke to the BBC and was part of a new expedition aimed at examining the deterioration of the wrecked site. The captain's bathtub is a favorite image among Titanic enthusiasts, and it is now gone. He told the British outlet he called the discovery shocking. The whole deck house on that side is collapsing, taking with it the staterooms. And that deterioration will only continue to advance. Expedition scientist Claire Fitzsimmons cited the immense amount of life at the bottom of the Atlantic as reasons why the Ship of Dreams was decaying. There are microbes on the shipwreck that are eating away at the iron of the wreck itself, creating rustical structures, which is a much weaker form of the metal. The footage that the team captured will be part of a documentary from London-based Atlantic Productions.
I'm wondering why this is so shocking. I mean, this has been sitting at the bottom of an ocean,
like
super
two miles down
water,
or 3 miles down or something, isn't it?
Cold salt water. I mean, that is the perfect situation for decay.
But it's also a way in which a lot of that stuff is preserved, too. And yes, it's 2.37 miles down off the coast of Newfoundland, about 370 miles.
So I am no scientist. That is the understatement of the millennium.
Mm-hmm.
However, explain to me again why most of it cannot be brought to the surface. It doesn't explode, but basically if you brought it up, it would be destroyed. Is that right? Because they brought some stuff up. I mean, like the dishes. Like, there are things that have been brought to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the exhibit. Why can't they just bring some of it up?
It's too heavy.
Not the whole thing, but is there nothing left down there that could be?
I don't know. I do know. Well, first off, no, never mind. I was going to say it might have to do with legal issues, but no, because it appears to be an international water. I know that Canada has pretty strict legal regulations on that, which is why the Edmund Fitzgerald still sits in Lake Superior. But as far as the Titanic goes, no, that's international water. So I don't think it'd be a legal thing.
So this is on Quora, so take that for what it's worth. You could never lift it, not by attaching cables to it. The entire thing would crumble into an enormous cloud of rust. And that was the well-preserved bow. As for the detached stern, it imploded on the way down. Because remember, it sits on in two pieces quite a ways apart on the ocean floor.
Mm-hmm.
And with the currents, they're migrating from one another.
Yeah, it says the decks pancaked on top of one another as it imploded on the way down. Survivors actually heard the sound from underwater, and it was totally smashed when it hit the bottom.
So I guess the force of it coming up against the water would be enough to just disintegrate what's left. It's kind of what it sounds like there.
Yeah, and the other thing I'm wondering, because I remember I went to that exhibit, and that's one of the rare exhibits that if it is somewhere in a different city I'm visiting, if it came back here, I would go to that again and again. I've got this kind of bizarre fascination with that wreck. I think a lot of people do. I don't know why, but I do. I could have stayed in that exhibit for hours looking at the artifacts and I don't know why, like the dishes. There was even a letter, a preserved letter. And I don't remember how they explained that. But some of the stuff they were able to save just blew my mind. Shoes and glasses and, you know, that's why this stuff sells for such crazy prices when it comes up for auction from time to time.
Here's the other kind of thing to think about. Are we sure that even if we could bring it up, that we really want to do that, considering
it's a grave site?
Yeah, exactly. It's a mass grave on the ocean floor. Even if we had the capability to do that, I mean, is that really a good idea?
Yes, but without getting graphic, is it really a mass grave? I think the answer is no. I think it is a haunted image and reminder of what happened to the people who were on the ship, but are there actually remains in the ship?
Probably not.
I don't think so.
I would imagine so. That far down?
Ooh. Let me look it up.
Far down, with temperatures being what they are off the coast of Newfoundland, I'd have to think those remains are going to be reasonably well preserved.
So here we go. When the RMS Titanic sank 100 years ago, about 1,500 passengers and crew went down with it. Some of the 340 victims were found floating in their life jackets in the days following, but what happened to the other 1,160 is still a mystery. Newly released photos, now this was back in 2012, suggest that at least some of the unlucky travelers' remains were mixed in with the wreckage of the ship. The question is controversial. After 33 trips to the ship, quoting here from James Cameron, I have seen zero human remains. Yeah.
But did
getting graphic, there was a powerful storm the night of the wreck, and the life jacketed passengers would have probably been dispersed widely across the ocean floor. The state of those remains would depend on how exposed to the currents of oxygenated water and the deep sea scavengers that thrive on it, how much of that stuff has impacted them over the years. Decomposition slows if bodies get cut off from the open sea, reducing oxygen levels and scavengers. But I would not be surprised if highly preserved bodies were found in the engine room that was deep inside the ship. So if that is the case, well, then yes, it would be.
At this point, I wouldn't.
You would just leave it.
Yeah, I'd leave it.
5767798. We will switch gears when we come back. I want to talk to my teachers out there about an interesting story on money.com. Wow, really?
Come on, it's a good one.
You know, one of the really creepy, cool, but creepy things they do in that Titanic exhibit is they give you a ticket on your way in. And your ticket is who you are. It's the name of an actual passenger who was on the ship. And then you go through the exhibit, and then at the end, there is just this massive list. And you know going in, if you're first class, second class or third class, you know, male or female, you've got the name, your age, and then at the end, they tell you whether you were, that name was one of the survivors. Really, really super creepy. But if you've never seen that exhibit,
kind of cool.
Put that on your bucket list. It was
I'm sorry,
very cool.
You're dead.
Yeah. Did not make it. So someone hit me up on Twitter about a week ago asking me in a direct message to help fund her classroom for supplies, right? And she hit me up again in a direct message. So, hey, Dana, please check this out. I'm trying to stock my classroom. Any help you can provide, you know, can you put this out on social media would be appreciated. And just so you know, we don't have a hard and fast rule on this. We really don't. But generally speaking, we do not put those things out on social media through our KMBZ accounts because we are asked, you know, maybe 10, 15 times a month to support various causes. And it would be impossible to put it all out there. So I didn't reply the first time. Then I got a second DM. Please look at my, you know, GoFundMe or whatever it was for my classroom. So I click on it. And God bless her. Turns out she was like from New Jersey. I had assumed when she was saying, hey, can you help me stock my classroom? You know, this was a teacher from Raytown or Blue Springs or, you know, Overland Park. Turns out this woman was not even near Kansas City. And I'm guessing this was some kind of mass direct message campaign to raise money for her classroom. And like I said, it was New Jersey or Detroit. I don't remember. So listen to this from money.com. Teachers are finding new ways to raise money for school supplies. Here are six ways you can help. And it got me to thinking, are you helping in some way? Do you think it's okay for them to be using all kinds of different forms of social media to stock those classrooms? And if not, why? And then really at the heart of this question is, why are we asking teachers to pay for this stuff in the first place? Shouldn't this come from the bajillions of dollars we already spend on education? So again, the article's from money.com. It says social media can lead us on some wild rides. It also has the power to crack open a world we are completely unfamiliar with, embolden, inspire us to do better. Case in point, the hashtag clear the list that is circulating on Twitter. Hashtag clear the lists. It is actually plural, clear the lists. The hashtag was created by a Texas elementary school teacher named Courtney Jones, and she began with very humble origins. She wanted an easy way for fellow teachers to share their Amazon school supply wish list with each other. Since then, the hashtag has gone viral, not just within the education community, but outside of it as well. Celebrities, politicians, and local residents are all teaming up to make sure the lists are cleared. The result of the hashtag was twofold. Teachers are getting the supplies and funding they need to complete their classrooms, and the movement is raising awareness surrounding teacher salaries and a lack of funding for basic necessities. 576-7798. If you are trying to stock that classroom, I'm curious, how are you doing it? Are you asking the moms and dads? And this goes way beyond Kleenex and sanitation wipes, which were always on my kids' elementary school lists. Any teacher will tell you at the beginning of the year, you want to make your classroom welcoming, okay? Quoting here from Katie Strimmel, she's 26 years old. Truthfully, I cannot afford to do nice things for the kids. I cannot afford to go above and beyond. I have taken a second job to help defray some of these costs, which really is just unbelievable to me that anyone would have to do that. And this is basic stuff. You know, remember the last time you went into an elementary school classroom, and maybe less so at the middle school or high school level, but I don't know. And there are educational supplies all around. There are things on the walls. I mean, remember back to when you were in elementary school? What do you guys all remember on the walls? Like, I can so clearly see it. First of all, starting in about second grade, the cursive alphabet.
Oh yeah,
was
absolutely
up there. In my music teacher's classroom, she had all of these weird bus, for lack of a better word, of all of the great musicians. Mm. Beethoven, Bach.
Mm-hmm. I remember
back then, did teachers pay for that stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So why is it just now really coming to the forefront?
I think it's two things. One is the internet. We hear about this stuff more than we ever did before.
Sure.
Also, I feel like, and I don't know, but I feel like it's more essential than it used to be. Whereas teachers would pay for some things for the classroom, but it was because, you know, they wanted to have it.
Yeah.
As opposed to needing it for the bare bones basics, and now teachers are having to supply things that are really considered the basics.
Right.
Whereas before, you could say, I don't really need the busts of Bach on the wall, but I'd like to have them, or the balloon letters that would be on the, you know, on the bulletin board or that sort of thing.
Well, and especially for the younger kids, you want to make this a fun, cheery environment. And I do want to plug one of my favorite charities in all of Kansas City called Scraps KC. If you have never heard of it, look it up. Anyone can go to Scraps KC. It's down in Midtown. They give a teacher discount. If you come in, you can get all of your stuff there. They have glitter, markers. It's all of the crap in your art drawer at home that you don't know what to do with. Take that stuff to Scraps KC. Paper, pencils, any of that stuff. Scraps, thus Scraps KC.
Mm-hmm.
They will take it. They, you know, art canvases, and then they refurbish it if need be, and they turn around and they sell it for pennies on the dollar to anyone who wants it. But really, really, if you are a teacher, you got to check it out. Let's go to Jeff in Shawnee. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Just something you said just a little bit ago about should they be asking teachers to pay for this stuff, considering the bazillions, I think was the term you used, of dollars we pay for schooling and for education. You know, those bazillions of dollars don't go for teachers or to teachers. Good case in point is the Shawnee Mission School District.
Okay.
The new district office on 71st Street. You know, massive amounts of money went into that building, you know, to build things like living walls and, you know, all sorts of, I don't really want to use the term gaudy, but nearly semi-gaudy things that some of those bazillions of dollars, none of it goes toward actually educating students, either by employing a teacher or supplying supplies.
And I'm guessing it was many, many millions of dollars spent on that district building. Would you not guess?
Many, many, many millions.
Yes.
In the dozens or if not hundreds.
So let me ask you this, Jeff, then, and because we all know about building costs, maintenance costs, and certainly district employee costs, where you've got multiple assistant superintendents and support staff and all that stuff. Why can't they earmark even a small stipend of money within that budget for teacher supplies? Let's say it's $100, which wouldn't cover it, but would be better than teachers going out and getting second jobs or going online and trying to help get financing to pay
for it. Good question. And they could, however, put yourself, you know, in that kind of a position. Are you going to take money out of your little domain in that building and put it somewhere else? You know, in an altruistic society, yeah, you probably would. But the fact of the matter is, you know, if you've got the really nice looking office or the nice looking decorations or the nice looking furniture or the nice looking living wall or whatever in your building, you know, you want that because that's in your little,
right,
your little zone of influence.
It's your personal pork project, right? So I looked it up. There was a $233 million bond issue approved by Shawnee Mission voters in 2015. Okay. It is nearly gone. And the Shawnee Mission posted a story about it, breaking down where that money went. Shawnee Mission voters voted overwhelmingly in favor of a $233 million bond issue. Why can't we put this in front of voters and say, hey, we are going to earmark some of this money for teacher supplies? No one would deny that. I would rather have that than a living wall. 576-7798. You can text us at 22980. You're listening to Dana and Parks. text line is split on this. There are people saying this is ridiculous. We need to support the teachers. And there are also people saying we oversupply for those classrooms every year. If you are talking about Kleenex and sanitary, you know, what do you call those? Clorox wipes and that stuff.
Hand sanitizer.
We all have to donate the hand sanitizer every year. I can see where, you know, one teacher at the beginning of the school year getting 30 hand sanitizers might be overstocking. We're talking about more supplemental educational things for the classroom. Those are the things that are not covered. It is my understanding that, you know, teachers are paying for out of pocket. And I'm asking why. Let's go to Aaron on line one. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
So my daughter's a kindergartner, you know, first year in school. We go to enroll her. I talk to her teacher. Hey, is there anything you need for your classroom? Any supplies? Anything extra that's not on the list? She goes, no, I'm good. You know, I've taught school before, so I'm not a new teacher. Okay. So second week of school, we get the candy box sent home for the fundraiser. I email the PTA or PTO and say, hey, what are we raising money for? I didn't see a slip or anything. And they said, oh, well, we raise money for field trips. And I said, okay, well, and she sent me a link. So I get on that link and I see there's a list of supplies that the teachers are asking for. And lo and behold, her teacher had a list. And it was basic things. Books.
Yeah.
Different books. A CD player so that they can play, you know, music or CDs, whatever. You know, nothing major. So, you know, it's not always big items, you know. Sometimes it's just little itty-bitty things that you wouldn't think of. And, you know, I don't see any reason why there couldn't be a specific tax, you know. And if you want to do that, I'm pretty sure you can. It's not too hard to get stuff put on the ballot in Missouri. Kansas is a little harder if you can't do it by referendum.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure you could start a petition to have it put on the ballot to raise money for teachers and have it earmarked.
Well, or here's another thing that would be simpler than taking it to the voters, Aaron, and thank you for the call, is just doing a fundraiser at the beginning of the year in that school and saying, look, if everyone wants to pitch in $5 or $10, let's gather up the money and we'll gift it to we'll divide it by the number of teachers in the building with a classroom. We'll gift it to the teacher to be used for supplies. I wonder if people would go for that. 576-7798. Let's go to John in Kansas City. Hey, John.
Hey, Dana. My mom is a teacher at both the university level and in a high school up in Washington State. And for her high school students where she teaches technology, which includes programming, she, through reaching out to private businesses, was able to put together a grant to provide each and every one of her students for the year their own Chromebook and their own tablet for learning programming in the classroom.
So they get to, it was a grant?
They get to keep it's a private grant that she put together for reaching out to local businesses up there.
Huh. So involve the business community. Involve the private sector. Someone just wrote in on the text line, no teacher needs 4 boxes of crowns per kid. And thank you for saying crowns. 576-7798. Let's go to Thomas in Kansas City. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, Dana.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, listen, this is a multifaceted problem, but I tell you, it comes down to one fundamental. Because everyone's coming up with solutions about doing this, get donations and all the, you know, like your previous caller. The problem as I see it is, I did 20 years in the Coast Guard before I retired, and I went into teaching. I did it for 2 years. Yeah, fifth grade. But the mentality just blew me away, and the district and the administrators foster it. And it's the idea that teaching is a public service. And the teachers buy into this because many of them are young. They don't really think of it as, well, they think of it as a career, but it's still a sacrifice. And I think they wear that with a badge. And from my point of view, when I went in, I said, look, if you go to Walmart and you're going to be a cashier, you don't have to buy your own cash register. Your employer is required to provide that to you.
That's right.
And I feel the same way about districts. I mean, the state and the schools need to provide the funding to adequately equip these schools. Now, they do all sorts of crazy stuff, like buy iPads for everybody and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you run out of pencils. But I don't know if that will ever change. But the second thing is, when you spend your money on these on this equipment and you provide it to the students, they destroy it. I mean, they literally go through stuff, and it's crazy the things they do. I mean, you think a pencil's 10 cents, but, you know, I've had students sit there, and they'll break it in half right in front of me.
Right. Thomas, real quick, because we're up against the break, and I have to ask, why did you only last 2 years?
Oh, my gosh. It was too much sacrifice for not enough money.
Okay. Thank you for the call.
And somebody on the text
line. Sad to hear it. We need good male teachers in 2 years, and he's out.
Somebody on the text line says, do you decorate your office or does intercom? It's not decorating an office when it's a classroom. These are learning
Correct.
Utensils.
It's a function of your job. 576-7798. Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.